For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way towards salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. Or in the words of Paul, at present we see indistinctly, as in a mirror, but then face to face. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave. Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, the two most intelligent cave dwellers you're ever going to be dealing with, Mr. Mark Tuttle and Mr. Timothy O'Donnell. Guys, new year, new president, a lot of changes coming around, and, you know, I think a lot of uncertainty. And one of the big subjects that we're dealing with is the economy. How will a new president, a new approach to business in the United States, how's that going to affect a Catholic view of what we do on a day-to-day basis?
This election particularly has, I think, been a huge shift from what we've seen in the past. And not only just your typical pendulum swing that you have going from right to left, you know, from Republican to Democrat, but honestly what President Trump has brought in is honestly a huge regime change. I mean, I think you can kind of use that phrase with this. This has been a tectonic shift in the way the United States has, you know, kind of conducted itself. Revolution's probably too strong a word, but you know, it's approaching that. I mean, you know, the amount of turnover that we've seen in Washington, the amount of sort of the typical politicians that have been there for generations, particularly in the bureaucracy, going down, that seems to be turning over. President Trump's bringing in a lot of new people. So, yeah, there's a lot of changes going on right now, and in a way that's pretty much unprecedented, at least for our lifetimes.
Yeah, I think because the political environment was already so polarized that it feels like, you know, more, you know, 100, not just 180 degrees, but I mean, talk about, it's like whiplash, right? I mean, it's like, wow, you got to hang on and the flurry of headlines.
I'm thinking it's 360 because my head's spinning.
Right. I think you're right. And Mark, it's so different. And I can't really recall someone with a president that brings his particular kind of business background to the office. So it will certainly inform and his decision making, right, in the direction that he's going to set.
Yeah, I think we're already seeing it in kind of the pace that he's coming out with executive orders.
Yeah.
You know, I saw an article that was comparing executive orders from, you know, presidents past, and there's definitely been an upswing in recent presidents. There's George W. Bush, Barack Obama, Bill Clinton still holds the record, I think, for executive orders. But, you know, those three presidents have a lot more orders under their belt than we had in, you know, traditionally with the president.
And it's quantity. It's also quality, kind of what the scope of them are.
Right. But the pace with which President Trump has been coming out with not just executive orders, but doozies of executive orders is, yeah. I mean, very unprecedented.
Well, one that I'm very, not that we're going to spend a whole lot of time talking about its executive orders per se, but one I applaud is the reversal or the restoration of the Mexico policy about no longer funding or tying abortion funding to U.S. foreign aid is something I'm a huge fan of. So
yeah, I think, you know, we need to take a look as Catholics of, you know, each and every executive order coming out, how that squares up with Catholic teaching and how that's either bringing about, I guess, a more Christian, a more Catholic country, or moving us away from it. But the reversal of the Mexico City policy, I think without a doubt, is definitely moving us in the right direction towards a renewed respect for life. And not only that, but a renewed respect for I think the autonomy and decision-making of foreign countries as well, which is very consistent with Catholic teaching.
Well, the other thing since our last episode was the March for Life. So we had the inauguration, the March for Life, headcount on that kind of thing is always a little, it's a little tough. But the latest number I heard, Mark, was 800,000.
Wow. I had heard a couple of
people. And that was on EWTN radio.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I'd heard a couple of people commenting that it definitely seemed to dwarf the women's march the weekend before. Mm-hmm. That, looking at crowd, looking at crowd size and pictures and all of that, right. It seemed like there were a lot more people there for the March for Life.
Well, the women's march is kind of a one and done thing. I mean, the March for Life is 44 years.
Exactly. Yeah.
And people have been showing up in hundreds of thousands, A small year for the March for Life is like 200,000, right?
Right. Yeah.
And there you need a blizzard to drive down the numbers that low, right?
And if you take it cumulatively, if you look at every year, this is really the largest civil rights movement in our nation's history. The March for Life.
By far.
And it's very encouraging to see that number of people out there. I think there's a sea change going on as far as life issues.
Well, I'm curious though. I really want to spend a little bit of time here, Mark, with us thinking about what maybe some of the implications might be of having someone as the president of the United States who really does have kind of that business mindset. I mean, every president's going to bring their background to bear on how they approach especially thorny issues. And again, we've seen a flurry of activity already out of Trump and the White House and all sorts of stuff that's going on. It looks like it's going to be, trench warfare between the Republicans and Democrats going forward. But here in the cave, though, right, Mark, we want to get at kind of what are the philosophical underpinnings of what we might expect. We want to talk about policy a little bit, but we also want to get at sort of what are the principles that we might expect or see from Trump, along with how as Catholics do we make sense of that, or how do we square that, or how do we discern, what's really compatible or aligns with Catholic social teaching versus not. So I think we're going to need, I don't know if you and I are up to doing it by ourselves, we better bring in an expert.
Right. And you bring up the term principles. And I think in this discussion, principles we're going to be talking about aren't so much what we would necessarily mean as business principles, but first principles.
Yeah, more fundamental. Right.
Right, exactly. And so somebody with a business background, their whole life they've been trained towards those first principles of business, in increasing profits, reducing costs, bringing about the best bottom line possible for your company. And I think on a more ethical sense, making sure that, your revenues are being, sort of shared with all the relevant stakeholders within your business. But when you move to politics, you've got a whole different set of first principles. And so I think you're right. I think we're going to need to bring somebody in to help sort us out. What are the difference between those first principles of business and politics? And how might we see a President Trump starting to approach some of those things?
Well, you know what? Why don't we bring back one of our good friends of the show, Dr. Maximilian Torres from the Catholic University of America there in Washington, D.C. He's kind of at ground zero. We've had him on the show before. He's fantastic. Why don't we take a quick break? And when we come back, we'll get Dr. Torres on the line and welcome him into the Catholic Cave.
And we'll be back with more of the Catholic Cave right after this.
I've got the spirit.
Hi, this is Teresa Tomeo from Catholic Connection.
Hi, this is Barbara McWiggin, host of The Good Fight here on Catholic Radio Indy.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray Guarendi, host of The Doctor Is In here on Catholic Radio Indy.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta, and you can join me for Cresta in the Afternoon here on Catholic Radio Indy.
The best of EWTN plus great local programming. That's what you get when you support Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave, and I'm delighted to introduce Dr. Maximilian yeah. Torres. I will say Colbe. Yeah, who is one of my favorite saints.
Yeah, yeah. Not quite a saint yet, though. So,
welcome back, Dr. Torres. We're delighted to have you here. We're super excited to talk about. Boy, so much has happened since we've last had you in the cave, and Trump presidency and inauguration and March for Life. Where to begin? Let's talk a little bit about what are your initial sort of impressions with the Trump presidency so far?
Well, it's it has not gone unnoticed by the media, which which is a marked difference from the past 8 years, and so that's new and exciting. And I, as a Catholic, I'm heartened by his Supreme Court nomination yesterday, by all of the marvelous things that happened for pro-life people last week, culminating in the March for Life, but the reinstitution of the Mexico City policy and the Vice President of the United States speaking at the March for Life for the first time. And then he called out, CNN and the media reports, and you could see CNN signs there, and C-SPAN was there. And I don't know what they said. I don't know if they told the truth, but that notwithstanding, the pictures were evident for anybody who wanted to watch.
Yeah, that was super exciting. And here, since we're located right here in Indianapolis, I mean, we're always thrilled. We've always been a big fan of Mike Pence's pro-life stance. And it was, definitely historical to have him present at the March for Life. I mean, I heard, the crowd was estimated at 800,000 this year. I mean, that's just incredible.
I wouldn't doubt it. I was there last year, and I'm sorry, the year before. Last year, we got that pounding snow. The death storm, and they warned everybody away.
Mm-hmm.
And, I assure you, it was nowhere near the size of this. And this was, remarkable. I mean, and it was just great. It was just great. And in contrast with that, with the march or the protest of the week before, I don't know. How contentious can I be on your radio program? Because it occurred to me, forgive me, just please cut this out if it's too much. I mean, it occurred to me that in 1 week we had a March for Death and a March for Life.
Yes.
And the March for Life was a very civil, clean, respectful affair. It was profanity-free zone. Nobody wants to blow up anything, even over the last 8 years, when there would have been much reason to think that way. Nobody dared express a thought like that on, over a microphone. So, last week was a good week. Now, this week with the immigration policy, I really don't know what to think about it. I have read that President Obama did fairly much the same thing in 2011. I have read that this is really just the enforcement of 2015 law, which designated those seven countries. I don't doubt, and neither does the Pope apparently, that the Holy Father, that a country has a right to protect itself from foreign aggression if it thinks, if there's reason to think that there are terrorists coming into the country. We're not powerless to do anything about it.
Right. Now the Holy Father, talking about that a little bit, seems to have kind of said two things. He seems to have said, yes, countries have a right to, control who comes into their countries to kind of protect the borders, etc. But he's also said, we as Catholics have an obligation to be hospitable, to be welcoming to foreigners. Our Catholic bishops here in the U.S. have tended in that direction. So there's sort of two, I guess, sides to Catholic tradition on that. Are they in conflict on this issue?
No, actually, there's one side to it. Look, we are called to be hospitable to everybody, but we're also called to be citizens. And render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. And Caesar right now has decreed that we're going to hold this off for 90 days, for reasons of state. And I don't know that he's calling U.S. American, the Holy Father, he's really not calling us to any sort of civil disobedience over this, I don't think. I don't read. It doesn't mean we can stop thinking about it. It doesn't mean we can stop. I don't know, maybe there are ways to help, even though people country. I mean, sometimes when I read the stories about what we're not doing, we're not doing by not keeping our borders open and porous, I get the impression that there's really just the areas of the world where these people are coming from and the United States. And there's no other country in the world. So there's not Western Europe, there's not Eastern Europe, there's not anything in South America, there's nowhere in Asia. I mean, the only place these people can settle is the United States of America. And somehow that doesn't strike me as reasonable. That, you know, I don't doubt that these people need help, and God bless them. You know, God bless them. That this particular country, in this particular instance, and, you know, given the context, particularly what's happened over the last couple of years, where by all appearances, although the appearances may be false, I'm willing to grant that, by all appearances, the border has been pretty wide open. And lots of people have come into this country that might wish to do it harm. I mean, given all those circumstances, I don't, you know, I'm not going to throw stones at President Trump, particularly given that it appears that his predecessors, including his immediate predecessor, have done similar things, if not identical things.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point, too, when you look at, you know, the refugees and you look at our duty as Catholics to love them. If you look at the definition of love, which is to will the best for somebody else and, you know, to act in the best interests of somebody else. Inviting them over here as refugees may not necessarily be in their best interest, and it may not necessarily be a you know, an act of compassion that I think we've kind of set this dialogue up to be. You know, it's kind of either we welcome them in the United States or we're mistreating them. You know, it's not quite that binary. You know, there's only a small percentage of the refugees we can welcome anyway, just practically speaking. And so, you know, our best approach to helping the refugees may be more on the ground in the Middle East, or maybe working with other countries to make sure that, you know, there's a good resolution somewhere else in the world that may be a little bit more hospitable than the United States.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't comment. I don't know what the most compassionate route is. I imagine to those people, you know, they're when you're drowning, any hand of help is that's the hand of compassion. So I don't know. I don't know that I would say, you know, the most compassionate thing is to do something else. I just don't know. It's like there's an entire world here. And to put all this focus on one country, you know, albeit the most important country to my mind in the world, but to make it that binary choice of it's either Middle East or the United States, I don't know. I don't know that that represents reality. I'd like to see some of the people making lots of noise over this particular order and none before it, particularly in the past 8 years. But I'd like to see some of those people, you know, I know maybe there's something international that can be done. Maybe there's something, you know, away from the borders of the United States. It's like if we're really trying to help people and not just trying to rabble rouse, not just trying to build a fire under a president that they've been trying to impeach from the day after he got elected.
Right.
You know, right.
Well before he you know, his inauguration.
It seems they didn't like him from the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can't
all the way around.
Yeah. I think that's a safe bet. You know,
there's
100% certitude, you know, given Jill Stein and the Russians hacked our election.
Right, exactly. Hey, I want to remind our listeners, we're speaking with Dr. Maximilian Torres from Catholic University of America, where he's a professor of business and business ethics and interested in law and political philosophy. And I'd love for us to advance the conversation a little bit and get your thoughts, Dr. Torres, on how someone with President Trump, he's got a business background. How might we see how, you know, what are your impressions or what direction do you think someone with a business background at the highest executive level, how do you think he's going to be approaching, or how does that inform his like decision-making process, or someone with that kind of distinct background? I don't think we've seen that in the White House before. What might a businessman bring to bear?
Yeah. Well, to answer, first, let me comment on something you just said. I am at Catholic University of America, but these are my opinions, not Catholic University of America.
Fair enough. Right.
If I should say anything boneheaded or controversial, please do not impute it to my university, which is good and wonderful. And please do impute it to me. I'm corrupt.
Fair enough. That's how Mark and I feel about our comments.
Right,
don't
exactly.
Blame Catholic Radio Indy.
<We don't. laughs>
Yeah. So having said that, now I can go two steps back. I mean, we have precedent for this. President Bush II was a businessman. He wasn't a lawyer. And I remember commenting then, because I lived in Barcelona at the time, and I was invited to be on TV programs and all this in Barcelona. And I remember saying, particularly after the Clinton presidency, that it was a great relief to not have a lawyer in the White House.
Yeah, he had an MBA, right?
That there's something about legal ethics and legal training that trains one to be, to close one's eyes to the greatest atrocities, and then to pretend that it's the greatest virtue to defend those who commit the gravest sins. And there's, you know, in an adversary system, which is the system we operate in, you know, everybody's supposed to just go at it with brass knuckles, and you're supposed to win. And you're not, you know, you're not supposed to sit there and deliberate about truth. You're supposed to defend your client. You're supposed to take your client's interest. Now, of course, that's a rather crude rendering of what a lawyer's obligations are. But I think it's a fair statement of what a lawyer's ethos is and what we're taught in law school. And it's like people in business schools, they get other types of corrupted ethos, but they don't get that one in particular. And after 8 years of President Clinton, it was a real relief to me that somebody had been elected, you know, to the White House who did not share that sort of that ethos by training, by professional training. You know, fast forward to President Trump. You know, I mean, we've had 8 years of I can't even say a crafty lawyer because I mean they certainly acted that way, but they were never challenged. I mean, there was nothing like at least President Clinton had to deal with you know, smoking gun evidence of his infidelities in the Oval Office. President Obama was protected from anything. I mean, it occurred to me the week after President Trump was elected that he'd already been questioned harder and more often than President Obama had in the prior 8 years. And, all right, so we did have a lawyer in the White House, and now we've got a business guy. I mean, I do know about him. And I think we all know about him, that he's a deal doer. Mm-hmm. He's a deal maker. You know, he's the kind of guy, he seems to be a very quick study on things. He seems to have a very strong, definitive inclination. He seems to have a management style of delegating things to people, like he picks people. I mean, by the way, he surrounded himself with, you know, with reasonable people, you know, not with Kevin Jennings. And, you know, the education czar who was put in place to queer the schools, excuse me, I think that's the term that they use. And, you know, he hasn't surrounded himself with a bunch of wacky czars. He's, you know, he's proposed serious people for serious positions.
Yeah.
You know, he seems to let people do their thing. You know, he seems to put faith in people. His instincts seem to be in reasonable places. I don't know that his execution is always going to be great. I know he's taken a lot of flack for the way this immigration order was rolled out. But then again, I mean, I don't know. It's like if he had rolled it out the completely different way, would there have been any less flack? If he had done anything differently, would there be any less flack? I think the answer to that question is no. There will never be any less flack. That's the point. The point is to give him flack, you know. You know, as a business guy, I don't know. He doesn't scare me. But then again, I haven't seen. I mean, we all know that side of President Trump that we don't like in the Catholic world. We all know. You know, we all fear venality and corruption, particularly of a sexual sort. And yeah, you know, who knows when he does? I don't know. I'll have to assess it as he does things one by one. But I can't attribute it to his being a business guy.
Yeah,
I mean, if anything, what I attribute to his being a business guy is he may be a little single-minded about achieving objectives. But on the other hand, he lives in a very hostile world. He, you know, everything he does, from the moment he buttons his shirt in the morning, there's going to be people attacking him for the way his fingers were positioned on the cloth, you know,
right.
As the button went through.
Yeah.
And that's the world he lives in, which I think will have a tendency to keep him straight. I don't know. We shall see. I don't know if I've answered your question but as a, you know, I don't think that Donald Trump is nobody I'm going to use in my business ethics class as an exemplar of the way, you know, and that's for his, I mean, I do not know of, but I have encountered reference of his very pointy elbowed approach to doing business. But that doesn't surprise me. He's a real estate developer in New York.
Right. You know, that has a certain reputation, right, in order to be successful.
It's not a super clean business.
Right.
You know, in any country, is that a super clean business? And New York City is a cesspool of political corruption and patronage and the rest of it. It's like he was able to accomplish, you know, he was able to leave landmarks all over the city skyline. Which, okay, you can't do that without bribing people, and you can't do that without breaking some knuckles, and you can't do that without...
You're reminding me of Rodney Dangerfield in Back to School, where he's in the classroom, and you've got that, do you know this? You know the movie I'm talking about? You've got the British professor who's talking, you know, about all the theories of business, and Rodney Dangerfield characters this grizzled, you know, builder, kind of like a Donald Trump, and he's going, oh boy, you forgot all kinds of stuff, like paying off the cement workers unions and paying off the garbage guys and, you know, all this stuff. And it's just one of the funniest scenes because he brings this kind of raw, like what you're talking about, this kind of raw practicality about how you actually have to get things done. I think on one hand, that's one of the most exciting things about Trump is that he's certainly a man of action, but also that's probably also the thing that scares me the most too is sometimes action, if you're all about action, sometimes you might lose direction.
Right.
You know?
And not only that, I mean, you know, we finally to a certain extent, I think, have ends in the White House. Yeah, I think, you know, in previous administrations, and I think you're right, I think it goes back to the legal, you know, adversarial ethos of somebody that's a lawyer. You know, the ends aren't quite necessarily as important as they are to a businessman. You know, we've got a good sense of the direction we're headed, the goals, the ends, the means of how we get there may be a little more fuzzy, you know, with a business person. And I think it goes back to that idea that, you know, if you've got a lawyer, you've got, as you said, a win-lose situation. Or if you have a businessman, that's only one possibility, win-lose. You can also have win-win, and you can also have lose-lose. And I think, you know, I think having that different dynamic, you know, casts a whole different light on what's going on in the White House.
It's interesting. You're pushing towards this discussion of men. I was reading yesterday in this essay from the great books of the Western world that I gave my students on prudence, that Aquinas distinguishes between political prudence and normal prudence, you know, sort of the prudence of human action, and somehow it's related to the ends of the particular enterprise. I don't know. You know, and by the way, it was a few paragraphs in the essay. I don't know if you must be familiar with the essays in the Synopticon and the great books of the Western world.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Adler's one of my heroes. Yeah.
Yeah, so there were, you know, so there's only two or three paragraphs on it. But the distinction is made that there's something different about political prudence than there is about other forms of prudence. And
right. Your political prudence is directed towards the common good. And I think that's another notion where that's kind of a question I've got with Donald Trump and his business background is how much of what he does is going to be focused on some notion of the common good versus, you know, as you kind of said, you know, practical ends that go along with business or go along with, I guess, more normal human enterprise than politics. So far, you know, so far I've got to kind of say I'm optimistic that he seems to have that sense of the common good in the back of his mind. But
that I don't doubt about him at all. I mean, he seems to have a very strong idea of what's good for America and where America's been getting ripped off or getting... you know, where arrangements in the world are prejudicial against America, you know, with respect to jobs, which we talked about the last time we spoke, and with respect to a number of things. I mean, he certainly is moving rather decisively and rather quickly on the things that he thinks the country needs. By the way, on this immigration order, it has occurred to me, and occurred to me going to bed last night, maybe I can say it on the radio now, is that one thing I have not seen a lot of is public polling about how people, you know, how does the public perceive this executive order and the reaction, which indicates to me that maybe the public is with him, which is why we haven't heard anything about polling. Because if the, or I haven't at least, you know, the if the public was against him,
yeah. They'd be throwing that up in his face, and left and right. That'd be the headline of the New York Times. Right,
yeah, and I think I did
every
see...
Every minute of every day, you'd see polls indicating that the American people don't support President Trump on this and that.
Yeah.
So maybe his notion of, you know, of... I hate to use a term like the common good, but you know, of what's good for America, if you will, you know, coincides with that of the deplorable. You know, who put him in office. And I don't know, the thing that worries me about him, and I think it, you know, worried serious Catholics who couldn't vote for him, it is this issue of prudence. It's that, you know, wise decision making in action, you know, in the concrete everyday circumstances of life require prudence, you know, for deliberation, judgment, and choice. And that there are two things which really destroy prudence, you know, which just wipe it out. One of them is lust, and the other is greed. And he had the reputation of a man that was afflicted with both of those vices. And the conclusion to somebody, you know, versed in virtue theory is that this man is not going to be able to be prudent. So because, using the example that Aquinas uses, that, you know, when the lion sees the stag, he doesn't see this leaping, beautiful animal, you know, that has this thing. He sees lunch. That's what the lion sees, you know. And
right.
The greedy man and the lustful man or woman see the same thing. You know, they see lunch all the time when they're looking at other objects. So, that would be my concern. Now, I don't know. There's been a lot of talk of his kind of conversion. I saw a story the other day where he said, I need God more every day with this responsibility. He said something that sounded very Solomon-like, you know, that this, like, the weight of this responsibility is simply too heavy, and I need God to help me, you know, like Solomon asked for wisdom.
Yeah. Or what about St. Thomas Becket, right? I mean, that was kind of that was maybe part of it too, part of his, like, conversion, right? Is once he felt the full weight
of the office,
he was brought to his knees, right?
Yeah, and you know, when this does happen at church, apparently it happened to a bishop in Shanghai as well. He was installed, and at his installation mass, he said that from now on, you know, he would be loyal to Rome. And this is pure hearsay. I know from a friend there who told me that they arrested him on the altar. You know, but as soon as he said it, you know, a bunch of guards stepped up and took him down. And, I mean, it does happen in church, man. And it was very refreshing to hear it from, you know, hear it of the President of the United States. I don't know how realistic these things are. I don't know what's fake news and what's not fake news. I simply can't judge what's going on, you know, with his interior life. But there have been indications that something is afoot, you know, like there's something stirring in his soul, and I'm very thankful to hear it, and I hope it's true. The, you know, that notwithstanding, the people he has put around him, you know, Steve Bannon accepted, not because I have doubts about him, I just don't know about him, and I know of all the controversial things about him, I've heard tell of. But, you know,
the media hates that guy.
Yeah,
I mean, they just,
oh, yeah,
you think they hate Trump, they hate him even more.
Well,
they barbecue
Breitbart.
Him every chance they can. Yeah, oh, yeah, they hate Breitbart. Yeah.
They hated Breitbart, too.
Yeah.
I mean, they hate
Breitbart. Yeah. Can I ask you, Dr. Torres, a question about, really love to get your insight about something maybe more policy or principle related. Trump's made a lot of saber rattling about, and I think he means to do something about it, as it pertains to international trade. You know, he's, and you've mentioned it yourself earlier in the program, Doctor, about, you know, there's unfairness, there's stealing that's going on, certainly around like intellectual property and things like that. He's made, and of course, those overtones have been directed at China, Mexico, other countries. What would be some of the implications? Where do you think he might be going? And what are some of the implications of, you know, we hear like trade wars and things like that. What does that entail? And what might be some of the implications of that?
Well, it means borders close up. It means goods don't flow easily. It means that the things you buy from overseas are suddenly much more expensive. It means our exports go down. It means, you know, imports go down. It means that business on a global scale slows down. Prices on a local scale go up. Yeah, these are not good things. You know, they're economically speaking, they're not things that we want to welcome. You know, apropos to our earlier discussion about what you expect from a businessman, well, one thing you'd expect from a businessman is a lot of negotiating and posturing and blustering and saber-rattling and all the rest of that. And I don't know. I simply don't know enough about him and his business methods to know whether he's serious or he's just negotiating. You know, where he comes out with the strongest position and then tries to work to some other objective that he really had in mind that's not the one that he led with, that he mentioned. I don't know. I do know, you know, I have seen this stuff pass by my feed on with respect to Mexico. And apparently he got some concessions from the Mexican president, or he got some willingness to discuss issues further. I don't know that it's particularly appropriate to humiliate foreign leaders in public. In fact, I think it's inappropriate. And maybe that's something he's got to learn. You know, the people he's dealing with on the other side of the table have egos too, and they also have, you know, nations that stand behind them that may not like being humiliated, you know, by the United States or by anybody. And that's something maybe he has to learn as he goes through. I hate to comment on it. I mean, I do know, by and large, from an economics point of view, trade is a good thing. You know, letting capital flow to its most productive uses, wherever that may be, is a thing that ultimately redounds to lower prices, more employment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, these are good things. The bad thing is that, you know, the term we use in economics is from Joseph Schumpeter, was that capitalism is a system of creative destruction. And then we, like, quite often in free enterprise places, there are places where people believe in not trying to shackle economic activity or creativity or innovation or any of that stuff. We tend to throw that term out there without a lot of consideration to what happens to the people who are in jobs that are creatively destroyed. You know, like what happens to the detritus of creative destruction, which tends to be human beings, you know, people, persons, you know, with dignity. And, and this is apropos again to what we spoke about last time, and it's apropos to a piece I have coming out in First Things, in the March edition of First Things. I mean, maybe this will be to the good. You know, maybe this will help us shift focus onto, what about these people who get dislocated by creative destruction?
Well, that's. I'm so glad you brought that up, because we're out of time. So I was going to ask you what you. I know it flies by, but I was going to ask you to share a little bit about what some of your upcoming projects are, and, you know, people want to learn more about you and your work. What's the best way to do that?
Well, to go to Catholic U's website. I'm not a how to put it. If you go to my LinkedIn page, for instance, you'll see that I work. You know, I don't even know that I've put up that I work at Catholic University.
I'm a bit slow in that space myself. Right.
I don't do that. I mean, I can tell you there is a piece coming out of First Things in March.
Great.
And I welcome, you know, anyone to read it and to comment on it. The I'll be attending a Liberty Fund panel on the vocation, vocation. We can leave it there. And, yeah, so we're reading Exodus, and we're reading Plato's Apology, sort of the cost of calling. And they're very interesting stuff. So I'll be participating in that. I've got an Acton University talk on the sanctification of work coming up in June.
At Acton University?
Yeah.
I'll be there. I go every year. I've gone like the last 8 years. I'll see you there.
Yeah, it's a great event. It's really
yes.
a great event. But, you can certainly go to the website. And we do have media people here who are, if they could ever corner me or corral me to long enough to sit down with them to tell everyone what I'm doing. They'd be more successful at that, but I don't know that I have my CV posted there, but which has sort of a list of publications, events, speaking, so somebody wanted to go back and read. But that's briefly what I'm up to.
That's fantastic. Well, and we're going to have you back real soon, Dr. Torres. And again, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Appreciate all the insights and all you're doing to advance the Catholic intellectual tradition. You're a great friend of the show. We wish you well, and Godspeed.
Thanks for having me, Tim. It's been a pleasure.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Timothy O'Donnell and Kent Blanford in the cave. And we just got done discussing about the Trump presidency and business and ethics and first principles and how things are going to differ a little bit having a businessman rather than a lawyer in the White House. Dr. Torres is just such a wealth of information. Coming from Catholic University, he's got that
right there in Washington, D.C.
Right, exactly. Yeah, he's in the thick of it. He's got that professorial mindset.
Yes.
But he's also got a business background. So, he kind of can bring that all together for us.
I think he's got
us,
a law degree, too. I'm pretty sure of that. Yeah. He went to Harvard Law.
Yeah, so he brings up. But one thing that he brought up towards the end, we were talking a little bit about globalism with him and how the Trump administration has promised and probably will follow through with it to a certain extent of extracting us a little bit from the push towards globalism that's been going on for a few decades here. And all of this is in the name of trying to speak on behalf of those who have been left out of globalism. The deplorables to a certain extent, but I think more importantly, the people who've kind of lost out in this push towards global trade a little bit. And there's a part of me that when I hear that, Catholic social teaching rings in the back of my mind that we should have a preferential option for the poor and we should have a preferential option for those who can't speak for themselves.
The vulnerable.
And, I guess it's a little bit of a contradiction from what you've heard from the media that, Donald Trump in a lot of ways is speaking up for the vulnerable and those who don't have a voice right now in the current system and those who are left out. And the poor. I wanted to continue that discussion with Dr. Torres, but I guess since he's not here, I'll continue that one with you, Tim.
Okay, great. I actually heard it explained this way. I thought it was very helpful for me is that, you think about, I think a fair metaphor or analogy to the country or our nation would be to think about our own family, our own household, where in our household, Who's our first priority? It's our immediate family members, right? At my house, it's in your house too. It's your immediate family members are our top priority. It also means, though, if someone is on our doorstep who is vulnerable, in need, poor, we're to welcome them and show them hospitality and share our goods with them, right? But it also invite them in, right, and care for them and love them. But it also means that there's also the occasion, though, where someone who shows up on your doorstep is a burglar, right? We're not required, who might be in need, we're not required to let them in and take what they want and abscond with her, or someone who means aims at doing evil to us, right? So we have to have that balance between, and the right set of priorities, right? Where we understand that our obligations, first and foremost, are going to be to what? Well, to those who are in closest relation to us, and includes things. So it's not an either or, which I think is what comes up sometimes in these discussions. It's one or the other, but it's, I think where we're going is where the country is headed now under the current administration, at least one of the priorities is going to be trying to, the motto I hear is, you know, America first, right? And that's not to, I don't take that as, and I wouldn't want to see it as being exclusionary, but simply maybe a recalibration of priorities. Because when America is strong and prosperous, we then have the means and the resources and the will to really be more hospitable. No one's more generous than the United States, right? And no one's more generous than the Catholic Church, right? In terms of education, caring for the poor and privileged. So Catholics in this setting in the United States, we have a special duty, a special obligation, a special responsibility to be the salt, right? And the leaven in our country.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you look at the idea of prosperity, and as prosperity moves along, you wind up with a certain surplus of goods. You know, you wind up with and the preferential treatment idea of social justice is that any of that surplus needs to first and foremost go towards those who are less fortunate. And they take preference over, you know, somebody that's been winning, to be perfectly honest. Then you get back to President Trump, and you've got kind of you got two pictures of him. On the one hand, you've got the picture of him being a shrewd businessman, a wealthy millionaire, one of the one percenters, etc., who's going to take care of his own. That's kind of the picture that's drawn of him. And then on the other hand, you have, the America firster, that's going to put the needs of Americans, and particularly those Americans who seem like they've been left out, first and foremost, above kind of the rest of the world, and particularly the rest of the international business world.
Yes, and I think, too, when you mentioned that calls to mind for me is the notion of giving out of our abundance, which is certainly something we're called for, but we're called to do even more. What I think what might be happening too, or what one of the aims might be, is that as American prosperity grows, one of the best things we can do is create employment opportunities where we give people meaningful work. And it was Dr. Torres, and the last time he was on the show, that helped us really kind of understand the difference between jobs and work. And I thought he made that really important distinction. We talk a lot about job creation, but for him it was also, hey, really, it's really more about work. The work is the context in which we build our characters, we form ourselves into certain kind of people. This is where virtue happens. And work often can take the form of an employment, a job. But a lot of people do. There's a lot of work, right, that I do that doesn't involve an employment, per se, right? I spend a whole afternoon in my garage doing a lot of work.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to get a paycheck for that. But what I'm getting at is that as we prioritize in terms of taking care of, say, our own families, as that prospers, it creates, as the economy grows, for example, it means putting people back to work that need to work so they can what? Care for themselves, right? In the context in which they can grow into a certain kind of virtue. I mean, we talked about, though, and I want to get your thoughts on this. Dr. Torres there at the end was mentioning this destructive capitalism, right?
Right, yeah.
So what are your thoughts on destructive capitalism?
Well, it's been brought up before that capitalism, almost by its nature, tends towards this sort of progressive, movement towards the future. And that process, Schumpeter described it as creative destruction.
Yes, other
economists have talked about it. You know, Karl Marx talked about it. You know, it's part of the nature of capitalism that as it moves forward, as sort of the productive capabilities of an economy are driven forward, they leave a wake of destruction behind them. And that's just sort of the nature of capitalism.
It's seeking better, cheaper, faster, right?
To a certain extent, it's one of those forces of nature that I think we as Catholics just have to be mindful of, that as our economy grows, as we move forward, there are going to be casualties. There are going to be people who are kind of left in the wake of this. And, Dr. Torres was exactly right. Those are the people whom Trump kind of talked to during the campaign. And so the expectation is there that he's going to do a lot to try to kind of help those that get left in the wake. And, I think that's another characteristic of President Trump as a businessman. I think he's probably more conscious of those who wind up left out and wind up without a job, wind up fired. He's probably more conscious of that than somebody that comes up through the political ranks and has a legal pedigree and doesn't have that business background. And, hopefully that translates into a certain amount of compassion for those who are currently unemployed, who are looking for work, who are left out, certainly from his campaign, it sounds like that's a lot of who he was reaching out to.
Yeah, and he might also bring a completely different set of understandings around accountability for performance and action. And so, if you're in an elected office, you have a constituency that you're responsible to who have to continue to elect you in office. And although there does seem to be a lot of momentum once you're elected, it seems pretty easy to get reelected by and large from what I've seen, which is why term limits keep coming up. But a lot of the government, federal government especially, apparatus are not elected officials, but rather they're salaried employees, right? And so they don't always seem to have the same kind of accountability that one might find in the private sector. So with his sort of private sector background, I'm wondering if we're going to see more accountability about maybe he's going to be more effective about sort of wringing out, kind of waste and fraud, because businessmen are typically good at that that's how you save money. You cut your losses on foolish projects. And those who are slackers, you let them go and on and on and on, right? You kind of clean house that way. And so I'm wondering if that might be something that we see from this administration, given, again, part of our program has been focused on, how might a business person with a business background differ from, as Dr. Torres said, someone with a lawyer's background. He might do that.
Yeah, and a lot of this obviously is speculation. I mean, and I think the whole country to a certain
extent. I like to think of it as a wild guess on my part.
Yeah, exactly. A wild guess, because in a lot of ways where we are kind of going
every day there's something new, Mark, with this guy.
Yep, we're going into unprecedented ground. And that's why, in a lot of ways, that's why we're here at the Catholic Cave, is to try to take what's going on and try to look at it through a Catholic lens, but a Catholic a lens that has been formed over the years through the tradition of Catholic philosophy and that Catholic philosophical tradition. So, looking at the presidency, that's just one of the topics that we're going to look at here on the Catholic Cave. And so we invite you back next week, because we are out of time this week.
We are. Hey, before we go, though, let's make a quick plug. Coming up March 1st will be 40 Days for Life.
That's right.
Lot of momentum, a lot of positive developments on the cultural life here in the United States and overseas, I might even say. So get involved. Listen to Catholic Radio Indy for more updates and details on 40 Days for Life.
And Mark, what's the website we'd want to go to if some people want to get involved in 40 Days for Life?
40 Days for Life Indy. 40daysforlifeindy.net, I think. So
you can Google it. It'll pop up.
Yeah, right. If you Google 40 Days for Life Indianapolis, you'll find it.
All right. So we invite you to do that. And for Mark Tuttle, for Timothy O'Donnell, once again, our thanks to Maximilian Torres for joining us today. That is it for the Catholic Cave. Until next time, may God bless.
Thanks for joining us for this edition of The Catholic Cave. If you have a question or comment regarding this program, please address an email to Kent, K-E-N-T, at CatholicRadioIndy.org or call 317-870-8400. Replays of this program are available on podcast at CatholicRadioIndy.org. Just click on the programming tab, then go to podcasts of local programs.